Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm your host, Paul Grunion. This is the Hermetic Hour. Now, tonight we're going to discuss mystical Mount Shasta. We'll give you the background behind the 150-year history of Atlantean, Lemurian, and related spiritual encounters of the third and the fourth kind that have made this dormant volcano, actually it isn't that dormant, it rises in solitary snow-capped splendor, a mecca for mystics seeking spiritual enlightenment. As we revealed in our article in Atlantis Rising, number 79, about a year ago, that was the January issue last year. And we'll review our own mystical experience that was recounted in Mysteries of Mount Shasta, home of the underground dwellers and ancient gods. And that book is edited by my friend Timothy Green Beckley, who I hope is listening and I hope will call in, and it's available on Amazon. Now, we'll also mention Pluto's Cave. That's the lava cavern north of Mount Shasta. And we'll discuss the connection to Non-Madol, a mysterious ruined city out in the Caroline Islands in the Pacific. And we'll mention our experiments with Dr. X's recreation of the Hidden World Receiver, which was the device that inspired the fabulous Intragravitron in our film Beyond Lemuria. So, tune in and listen to the voices beyond the vortex and the latest theory on J.C. Brown's lost treasure. Now, our guest call-in number is 347-857-1830. That's 347-857-1830. 1830. So give us a call, and especially Tim, if you're listening, go on, call in. Now let's get on into it. Mount Shasta in Northern California, right below the Oregon border, has a reputation all over the world as one of the great mysterious and holy mountains. Like Japan's Mount Fujiyama, and like Tibet's Mount Kalisio, and like Mount Meru, it's one of these, or the Rosicrucian Mount Abiegnus. This is one of the great sacred mountains of the world. Now, it was sacred to the American Indians long before this Atlantis and Lemurian thing got started. The American Indians up there in that area believed that this mountain was where the spirits of the dead went to the mountain and ascended from the top of this 14,000-foot solitary volcano. They ascended to the Milky Way, which universally is known by shamans and magicians all over the world as the River of Souls. And this was the ancient American Indian belief. Now, When did Mount Shasta become a home for Atlantean, Lemurian, and New Age spirits, avatars? When did this occur? Well, it all got started back around the 1870s, when Shasta was really a complete wilderness. Of course, it's still pretty much a wilderness now, but then it was really, really off the beaten track, and a young man, 17 years of age, young boy, Frederick Spencer Oliver, was the son of a miner up there in that area, gold miner, and he was out on the slopes of Mount Shasta staking out his father's claim, marking it out, staking it out, and this, all of a sudden, he is overcome by the presence of this ancient Atlantean adept, the Master Philos. Philos became an overwhelming presence to this young man on the slopes of the mountain. Now, this is the first of these sorts of visions in Mount Shasta. This is what starts it all off. Young Frederick Spencer Oliver was frightened. He didn't know what to make of this. Philos said, described who he was and who he'd been, and he said, "I am going to dictate my story through you. You are going to be my amanuensis. You are going to write my story." And young Frederick said, "No, I don't want to do that. I damn it, I want to do it." "Yes, you're going to." So Philos took over, literally took over young Frederick Spencer Oliver's mind and took over his hand and dictated to him this rather lengthy book, which seems to be almost in the form of a novel. This book is called Dweller on Two Planets, by the way, or The Dividing of the Way, and it wasn't published until about the turn of the century. But the book is really, really remarkable, even though there are some little indications of contemporary infusion, like if you want to be critical, you can say that Atlantis had trade unions that were very much like the trade union movement, get it started in after the war between the states, and so there's that sort of thing, and then there is a sort of a proto-Christianity that enters in, which is a little suspicious. But other than that, those criticisms, and of course we can say that yes, Frederick Spencer Oliver could have read Ignatius Donnelly's Atlantis, which was available at that time, and maybe even Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine, which was also available at that time. But this is pretty heavy reading for a 17-year-old kid living way, way out in the wilderness in California. But if you want to be critical, however, all of that said, Dweller on Two Planets is a remarkable book, And Philos, the Atlantean adept who narrates the story, is the avatar who started off everything that followed in through the years at Mount Shasta. Now, the book was published, I guess about 1900 or something, right around that time. And it became very popular all before World War One and after World War One. It was popular. Now, the temple under Mount Shasta, the secret temple, was supposed to be the temple of the Lithonian Brotherhood. And this was an international brotherhood of transcendent adepts and masters. And they had this secret temple under the mountain. Now, let's point out that Shasta is not really, he said it's a dormant volcano, but it really is not dormant. It actually is a live volcano. It hasn't gone off in about 150 years, but it's a live volcano. There are hot springs up there. There are smoky holes in the rock and whatever, and there's thermal activity, definitely thermal activity going on down there in that mountain. So the idea that there is some kind of subterranean Lemurian or Atlantean city under Mount Shasta that some people believe is not really very feasible in this dimension, but it's certainly feasible in another dimension. In other words, and a number of people who believe that Mount Shasta is a center for subterranean intelligence and whatever, they do understand that this is an interdimensional thing. And as such, it certainly could be, and frankly, I personally think it is, there is definitely a mystical presence up there. There's no doubt about that. Now Philo's described the fall of Atlantis, and he even described, very briefly in the book, the fall of Lemuria. Now, Philo's wasn't too complimentary on the Pacific Lemurians. He didn't have too much good to say about them. He was very concerned about Atlantean civilization. One of the things that he pointed out about Atlantis, which I thought was fascinating in the book, was before the fall of Atlantis, he described a phenomenon called the unfed light. In this great temple that they had in Poseidonis, they had this light, this flame, this magnificent eternal flame inside this temple that had no particular source. It just was a flame above the altar. And as long as that flame burned, Atlantis was powerful and spiritually empowered. But when they became corrupt, and when they became jaded and corrupt and warlike, and they began to degenerate, then the flame went out. And when the flame went out, Atlantis's days were numbered. Now, this is a very interesting concept because the Aztecs, as you recall, were very much into sacrificing human lives to feed the sun, because they were afraid that if they did not feed the sun blood, the sun would not come up, that the sun would die. Now, the implication here is that the unfed light, died, and then human sacrifice became to try to bring the light back. One of the things that leads toward this is the idea that when the unfed light was in the temple, when a person died in Atlantis in the Philo's book, they would take the corpse and move it on a gurney. They'd move it toward the flame in a ceremony, and the corpse would pass into the flame, and it would disappear. It would just be consumed in the flame, and it would return to the light. And this, of course, this is a presage of this eventual sacrificing to the sun. Now, the book Dweller on Two Planets has gone through numerous reprintings, and it in turn influenced a lot of following avatars and whatever. One of the people who came after Philo's was Spencer Lewis of Amorc, who wrote a book in published in 1931 called Mount Shasta, and it's called Lemuria, the Lost Continent, and the Mystery People of Mount Shasta. That was it, and he claimed, instead of Atlanteans, he said that the people of under Mount Shasta, the people, the mysterious beings of Mount Shasta, were Lemurian. In other words, the other lost civilization out in the Pacific. And now this started off the Lemurians on Mount Shasta, the Lemurian tradition. And very shortly after. Spencer Lewis published his Lemurian book, and by the way, they followed that up with a film too in 1935, a film on a pseudo documentary on the Lemurians in Mount Shasta, and that was quite popular. So this started off a New Age pilgrimage in the 1930s, the early 1930s, up there at Mount Shasta. People were looking for Lemurians in the Mount Shasta, and the people up there were fending them off, whatever it was. They were having pilgrimages up the mountain and whatever. An American mystic by the name of Guy Ballard, who called himself Godfrey King, went up there, and instead of running into Lemurians up on the mountain, he ran into the Comte de Saint-Germain, who gave him... the Comte de Saint-Germain, by the way, did the same thing that Philos did. Philos had a Chinese magician who first introduced him to the Lothinians up there, and the Chinese magician controlled animals, and he subdued a grizzly bear. Well, the Comte de Saint-Germain subdued a panther, very, very similar, and then gave Guy Ballard a drink of a magical elixir, and Guy Ballard drank the elixir, and oh boy, and he had a vision, and he went down the mountain, and he founded the I Am movement. And this I Am movement was very successful, strongly represented up at Mount Shasta. In fact, you can say that, as we said in our article, that half of Mount Shasta, the more prosperous half, are the I Amers, and then on the other side of the tracks you have the Lemurians. Up in Mount Shasta, by the way, the I Am movement is so much of an influence up there that they have a kind of a dress code in Mount Shasta. You don't want to wear black and you don't want to wear brown. You better wear pastel colors. And if you want to know how to dress properly, go by the I Am reading room. Look at the flowers they have planted out there in front of the I Am reading room, and any color that's on those flowers, that's okay. You can wear that, you'll be right in style. Now, the I Amers are wonderful people, and Ballard had a great vision when he came up with this I Am thing. It's the idea that God is in all of us, and the I Am, by the way, figured in Philos, the indweller on two planets. You find I Am mentioned several times in there, and so Ballard was certainly influenced by Philos and Dweller on Two Planets. Well, now along comes, as I said, Spencer Lewis with his Lemurians, and then everybody wants to get into the act here with the Lemurians, and so we got a fella over in Denver, Colorado, who kind of like Cyril Hoskins, you know, remember Lobsang Rampa, the Cockney fellow from Yorkshire or whatever, who thought he was the reincarnation of this Tibetan Lama and wrote a number of books and under the name Lobsang Rampa. Well, before that, we had this fella in Denver, Colorado, Durrell. And Durrell, who called himself the Red Llama, was another one of these, an American. I mean, he'd never been over to Tibet or anything like that, but he went there astrally, and he became the Red Llama, and he had quite a group and quite a cult going over in Denver. And he took an astral trip. Actually, he was giving a lecture in Los Angeles, and according to him, this was in about 1934, something like that. And Durrell was over giving a lecture in Los Angeles, and a couple of Atlanteans from Lemuria, I mean, not Lemuria, I mean, like Machest, a couple of Atlanteans in civilian clothes walked into his lecture hall, and when he took a break, they said, how would you like to come to Mount Shasta? And he said, well, I don't have time. He said, I've got another lecture in an hour. He said, well, that's all right. We'll take you there astrally, and you can be. We'll show you the whole setup, and you can be back. And so Durrell said, well, if you can do it in an hour, okay. So they drove to Topanga. Now, this is a pretty quick hour. They drove out to Topanga, and off they went through the astral, and they got to Mount Shasta. They took him down, and they showed him this marvelous underground city in Mount Shasta, but this was in another dimension, according to Durrell. And they explained that, well, no, the Atlanteans, we're still here. The Lemurians, we've got the Lemurians out in the Pacific under Non-Madol out there in the Caroline Islands. They're in these caverns that are down under the Pacific Ocean. The entrance is Non-Madol, and we're keeping the Lemurians out there prisoners because we don't like them, and they're not nice people. And so we fly out in our UFOs because they had, you know, this was 1934, but they had very, very advanced aircraft, astral aircraft, of course. They flew out there, and they're keeping these astral Lemurians down in the caverns under Non-Madol. Now, let's give a little tie-in here on Non-Madol for a moment, because as those of you who saw our film Beyond Lemuria, you know that we feature Non-Madol in the documentary section, and both Dr. X and I were out there. I was out there in 88, and Mark was out there in 98. And the reason why, this is the connection. Now, an interesting connection here. Non-Madol is a very mysterious place. It's one of the most mysterious ruins on the face of the earth. And it looks down into a lagoon, a very deep lagoon, where there is a sunken city, supposedly, that is older than Non-Madol itself. Non-Madol was supposedly built in honor of the sunken city 2,000 years ago. In honor of the sunken city below Non-Madol, that's 10,000 years old. Now, that's the gist of it. But in 1919, one of the greatest fantasy writers in American literature, Abraham Merritt, wrote a novel called The Moon Pool. And the novel was set in Non-Madol, and had a cavern, a huge cavern complex under Non-Madol, in which the descendants of the original Lemurians, Mu, of course, he was extrapolating this from church words Mu, which is also Lemuria, that they lived in this cavern complex, and they had these dangerous weapons, and it was a fantasy adventure story, very, very imaginative, but it dealt with these subterranean Lemurians under the Pacific. Now, this story profoundly influenced Richard Schaefer, and Richard Schaefer was very, very much influenced by Abraham Merritt, and especially by Moon Pool, and some other Merritt books. But Moon Pool had a very, very strong influence. Now, I think that Moon Pool also had an influence on Durrell. But so there's the connection between Mount Shasta, Non-Madol, the Lemurians, and the whole thing. We tied all this together, by the way, in Beyond Lemuria. We took the Lemurians from under Non-Madol, and we moved them out to Pluto's cave north of Mount Shasta. By the way, now let's talk about Pluto's cave for a minute. Pluto's cave is the last of the great lava tubes. The lava tubes coming down from Shasta on the north side, those lava tubes at one time extended. In fact, the Indians had a legend. They said that you could walk all the way from Shasta to the Oregon border and never come up to the surface. And that may have been true, because those lava tubes extend all the way just about to the border. But one of the larger ones was dynamited years ago, and nobody knows what happened to that one. But Pluto's cave, Pluto's cavern, is probably the longest one that's still accessible, and nobody knows how far back it goes. I mean, we filmed in the part of it that is accessible, but the back end of it, it looks like you're one of the most evil looking places in the world when you go in the back end of it, and it goes down into darkness, and nobody knows how far it goes, which is a perfect place to put the evil Lemurians, the evil survivors of Lemuria. It was down in there, and that, like Shaver's Darrows. And what I want to mention before I leave Pluto's cave, though, we want to mention that Pluto's cave is in this area north of Mount Shasta, this big lava flow, and it's a bad land. The trees are stunted, and the rocks are sharp and evil looking, and this place just looks like you can see it in the film. It's a gruesome looking place, and it goes on for miles and miles and miles, and the place really is very inhospitable. Whereas Shasta itself, on the other slopes of Shasta, her beautiful alpine forest, this beautiful, beautiful, wonderful with these great tall pine trees and with green moss glowing on them, and it's just an alpine. It's an alpine environment with this marvelous huge mountain rising up, snow-capped mountain. But then, to the north, you have this Badland, just like Mordor, or something that Lovecraft would describe. It's like the Plateau of Lang, or something like that. Kenneth Grant would be able to do things with it. And so, the interesting thing here is, and before I forget to mention this, right now, in the past 10 years, something like that, A new mythology is developed surrounding Shasta, which we can call the Telos mythology. Now, Telos is a Greek word that means completion. And sometime back, around 98, sometime like that, a psychic named Diane Robbins wrote a book, which is still very much available. It's on Telos, the underground city under Mount Shasta, T-E-L-O-S, by the way. And she got in contact with a Lemurian high priest who called himself Adama. I know, when did Adama get permission to leave Battlestar Galactica and come down and, be a priest for Mount Shasta and all that. But, you can have Adama. I guess you can have a couple of Adamas. But anyway, she got in touch with this high priest Adama. And he described this wonderful city under Mount Shasta, Telos. Now, this was, frankly, interdimensional. That's good. And it was Lemurian. And it's under Mount Shasta and Adama and a couple of other avatars, and they were communicating to Diane some beautiful New Age philosophy, and it's very 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 positive, very light oriented, very comforting. It's beautiful, beautiful channelings. And she published a couple of books on this. Now, this was kind of, she was kind of co-opted by a woman who just passed away recently. That's this Aurelia Jones, who also jumped in and did some Telos books. Aurelia Jones, oh, well, I think Diane Robbins did a fine job with the Telos thing. But I'm not so happy with Aurelia Jones. Some of her, I won't get into that too much. But Aurelia Jones passed away, so that's all right. But anyway, this Telos, the idea of Telos under Mount Shasta, this is the going mystical expression of Mount Shasta right now. Now, and it's right along with the Philos tradition. It's the flowering of it now. But interestingly enough, The very, very talented and exceptionally gifted futurist and architect, Eugene Tsui, T-U-S-I, an American-born of Chinese extraction, and this man is a marvelous architect and a futurist and a philosopher and very, very dynamic individual. And he has been planning and attempting to build a New Age university, kind of a retreat university, college of futurosity, whatever you want to call it, in somewhere between Shasta and Pluto. And it's actually out there. He bought or leased. I don't know how many 20 acres of land in this scrub lava field area between Pluto and Shasta, closer to Pluto actually than Shasta. And he planned to build this. You can go on the internet and check it out. You can check out Telos and just Google Telos and Eugene Tsui, and you'll come up with the plans for this place, and it sounds really wonderful. Now, it seems though that I can't tell which one came first, whether it was Diane Robbins' idea of Telos or whether Tsui's idea of Telos or which came first, the egg or the chicken. But Telos has. Apparently, Eugene is trying to create a real Telos, and I say real, you know, the interdimensional Telos is probably real too, and I think it probably is real because when I went up there back in 2005, when I first went up to Shasta, I had a vision up there on the mountain. That we had something to do with what we were doing in Beyond Lemuria. I'll read a little bit of that to you. But what we emphasized was something more like the Philos. We emphasized the Philos aspect that started it all off. And we gave, in our documentary portion of Beyond Lemuria, we gave some deference to Telos, and we showed Diane's book, and we mentioned it, and we showed some Fred Adams' artwork, and like Lemurians, and had some good things to say about them, the Lemurians. But we primarily emphasized the original Philos thing. Well, I went up there just a year ago, went up the mountain and sat down and meditated again up there in the Sacred Grove, you know, looking up at the top of the mountain and up there at 9,000 feet. And Sure enough, I got the Spirit of the Mountain again, and oh boy, and I got chewed out. He did. He said, "You were not fair to Telos." You know, yeah. So I guess maybe Telos under the mountain is, yeah. There's probably more to it. Maybe Obama is mad at me or something or other. But anyway, there is a Telos tradition up there. When we were up there, I think it's about 2 years ago now. One of the things I will never forget, and we're staying at the Great Western Hotel, and that's where you stay, by the way, in Shasta. If you're going to go up there and do the mountain, you stay at the Great Western Treehouse, right? The best place to stay in Shasta. And one thing, they give a real good breakfast in the morning, so you get plenty of good solid breakfast under your belt before you get up there to 9,000 feet. And that evening, though, we were sitting in the restaurant in the hotel and looking up through the picture window there, looking up at the mountain at sunset, and a lenticular cloud forming on top of the mountain. And here, out in the parking lot, right out in front of the window, looking up at the mountain, is a man, I guess about 85 years old, and a woman about the same age, elderly people, looking up at that mountain at sunset with that lenticular cloud, holding hands, and just staring up at the mountain. And I thought, and this was after I had gotten my mystical tongue lashing from you know, the Telos channeling up there in the mountain. I thought, yep, yeah, uh-huh, this is what it's all about. And here is this old fella and his lady, and they were looking up and holding hands, and I just thought, yeah, yep, under that mountain there's something really wonderful. Before we get any further, because I got a few things I want to remember to discuss here. Frank mentioned Etta Dorfa, and that's for details spelled backwards. And Etta Dorfa is a novel that came out around about the same time as Dweller on Two Planets. It's a subterranean. It's an adventure in the subterranean world, written by John Uri Lloyd. And this John Uri Lloyd was a pharmacist and a chemist, and at one time he was president of the American Pharmaceutical Association. He was a very talented individual, a very good scientist, and he was very much interested in alchemy. And he wrote this allegorical novel about the interior of the earth, Etta Dorfa, which you can get. It's available. In fact, I think you can get it from Timothy Beckley, I believe, if you can't find it elsewhere. In Etta Dorfa, the man who gets down, carried down, and guided down into the subterranean world, His name is William Morgan. He is I Am the Man. Now, in Beyond Lemuria, our candidate, played by Christopher Sanders, is also William Morgan. And there's about a triple meaning behind this, because John Uri Lloyd knew that William Morgan was the man who was going to expose, back in the 1830s, the man who threatened to expose the secrets of Freemasonry, and he was trying to extort his Masonic lodge to pay him to keep from exposing the secrets of Freemasonry. Instead of that, he got arrested on some charge and thrown in jail, and got liberated from the jail, and then disappeared. Nobody ever saw him again. And the anti-Masons thought that he'd been murdered, and maybe he was, I don't know. But anyway, the William Morgan affair just about wrecked Freemasonry in the United States back in the 1830s. Masonry just about went out of business as a result of this. Now, Uri Lloyd put William Morgan down in the underground and took him down into the underground world and introduced him to all these fantastic things down in the subterranean world. And we decided that in Beyond Lemuria, we would have our candidate who goes down to the subterranean world and up to Mount Shasta and everything, and we call him William Morgan as a sort of a to put yet another meaning on top of referring to Edendorfo, referring to William Morgan, referring to the whole business, to tie it all together. Now, so that, Craig, that answers your question there. It's very definitely a connection. And two, before I forget it, Beyond Lemuria, of course, was the first film, American film, any film, that is set on Mount Shasta and filmed on Mount Shasta and all that. We're the first one. However, there is another one just was released 2 days ago called Dreams Awake, D-R-E-A-N-S, Awake. And this is shot up on Mount Shasta. And they're, of course, saying, well, we are the first film shot on Mount Shasta and edited on Mount Shasta. Oh, come on. All right, so we edited ours down here in Southern California, but we shot ours on Mount Shasta. However, I'm looking forward to this film. This looks like it's going to be quite a nice one. It's intended more for general audience. It's a mystical, but it's more for a general audience, where ours was for occultists and science fiction buffs and people that, you know, are really into all of this stuff, whereas Dreams Awake is more for a general audience. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and you can get it, Google it, find their website, and you can order it from them. It's called Dreams Awake. And let's talk a little bit about the vision that I had up there, and we'll put in a plug for Tim Beckley's edited version here called The Mysteries of Mount Shasta, Home of the Underground Dwellers and Ancient Gods, and is edited by Tim Beckley, published by Global Communications. And in the back of the book, you've got a chapter called An Unsurpassed Visionary Experience by myself. And we got some really nice pictures here of myself and Mary Kamer and Isabella Shahira and all of us, and the Daryl Ray Machine, and Merrick holding his yoga class up on top as Phylos. And our costumes, and myself as the Atlantean high priest at the altar. And I said, it's good. The photographs are really pretty good. Okay, now, what I did when I went up 2005, I got up the mountain, and, you could drive up all the way up to about 9,000 feet up to Bruce's old ski lodge burned down, and it's called Ski Bowl. You drive all the way up there on the Everett Parkway and park, and then you hike up the mountain. It's not too far a hike. It's, a couple thousand yards up there to this wonderful sacred grove right below the glaciers. In fact, the glaciers, you're walking, even in August, you're walking through the snow. By the way, if you're going to go to Shasta, July, try to get there after the 1st of July and no later than the end of August. Otherwise, that mountain is covered with snow. You won't be able to get up there. But if you get up there in the middle of July and August, then you can get up the mountain to the Sacred Grove. And when you get up there, you'll discover that the pagans and the shamans and the mystics are very much alive, because that whole flat area right below the glaciers, and it's about 1,500 yards of flat area there, there must be 10 mazes and medicine wheels and mazes and rock cairns. It is amazing what you're, and every year they have to be rebuilt because the snow up there most of the year is 10 feet deep. And so they're very, very much the mystical activity up there is really, really is still very much alive and well. Now, let me see here. I'll read you right quick. I'll read you my little mystical experience here. And this was up in the, you know, up on the on that flat. I parked at Ski Bowl as before. The parking area was deserted. I trekked up the slope in a steady pace, still in my altered state, but totally aware and fully connected to my surroundings, as if I was a part of the landscape, a part of the mountain. I found the same spot up in the grove and took my asana, and after invoking a pentagram ritual and I performed pranayama and the mudras to bring down celestial light. And this time I raised my consciousness up to Hesed, that's the third eye in our hermetic yoga system, and then I opened my eyes to contemplate the summit. And the sun was still bright in the late afternoon sky, but clouds were forming. Once again, I invoked the spirit of the mountain, and this time it came. The spirit seemed to be male, although the mountain herself is female, and he used my voice, and I found myself speaking softly aloud, as if I were channeling an angel in a magical operation. And through me, the spirit said, "My name is," and I recall that, "but I will answer to any honorable name they choose to give me. And as you are aware, each sphere of the Tree of Life contains all the other spheres within itself. Here, on this day, you have attained Kether of Malkuth. You have achieved this level of understanding by climbing the holy mountain in a spiritual state of mind and thus becoming one with the mountain. You know that a human being is a miniature of the greater universe. You have all the spheres and the planets within yourself, and you are the child of Mother Earth, and she is the most potent planetary presence within you. And so, when you ascend the holy mountain, where Earth reaches up to heaven, you are at the summit of your mystical consciousness. Here, you will meet your ancestors and review your previous incarnations. Do not take these visions to be illusions. They are more real than the shadow world of your everyday affairs. Here, you will learn the secrets of the ages long gone by. You can indeed find the hidden entrance to an ancient temple of wisdom high on this sacred mountain, because that temple has always existed in your deepest memory. You become one with the mountain, and within the mountain is the secret temple, and this is the great arcana of Mount Shasta." And at that moment, the sun went behind a cloud, and it was as if a light switch had been turned off and the spirit was gone. My altered state quickly dissipated, and I was once again in the so-called real world. I reluctantly performed a banishing pentagram, and then I trekked down the mountain to my vehicle. I had returned to the real world, but I was not the same person I had been before the experience. And now I shared with Frederick Spencer Oliver, Guy Ballard, and others who had climbed the Holy Mountain a profound experience I had received Mount Shasta's initiation. And, you know, I later discovered that Elizabeth Clare Prophet had had a very similar experience up there on the mountain. But then that was my experience. And yet, a few years later, I went up and sure enough, I received a vision about the Patellos connection. So I think the Patellos connection has validity. I also feel that Mount Shasta is a national treasure. It's something that we can all appreciate at some time or other. And we like to go up there in August, in late July and August, as if at all possible. We like to get up there at that time. And perhaps this coming year we can go up again, and if so, we'll invite you, all to come up and join us, and we'll go up the mountain, and we'll introduce you to, or you'll introduce yourself actually to the spirit of the mountain, and receive America's holy mountain as a blessing. Before I sign off tonight, let me mention a couple of books that I think that you might want to find very interesting. For one thing, I think Atlantis Rising, I believe, number 79, that's last January, it's a year ago. Atlantis Rising, number 79, has our article, Shasta Mountain, a Mystery, which recaps what we've been talking about tonight. And I think that's still available online. If not, I imagine you could find it. Another book that I think Tim Beckley's Mysteries of Mount Shasta, Home of the Underground Dwellers and Ancient Gods, was what I just read from, and that's a very good wrap up of the various mystical traditions up there, especially the Telos experience, which you can find. Eugene Tsui's activity is still on the internet, and you can find that. I'd like to mention, though, a book before we sign off here, a book that I think you'll find very interesting if you can find it. And this is called Subterranean Worlds, 100,000 Years of Dragons, Dwarfs, the Dead, Lost Races, and UFOs from Inside the Earth by Walter Crafton Minkle. I'll spell that. K-A-F-T-O-N, Crafton Minkle, M-I-N-K-E-L, Walter Crafton Minkle, Subterranean Worlds. Now, this is probably out of print. It was Lampoonix's Unlimited was the publisher, and it's probably out of print by now, but if you can get it used, this is the best wrap-up on all of this. And Mount Shasta, of course, is covered in the book to some, was it back in print again? Used, yeah. Well, there it is. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. It's used. So, yeah, this is the best. I was telling Soror's Andrea that if I ever, that is one of the reasons why I didn't do a doctoral dissertation after my master's degree, because if I'd done a doctoral dissertation, it would have been just like Walter Captain Minkle's book, because that was and so when I read that, I said, uh-oh, there goes my doctoral dissertation. But it's a fascinating book. Now, next week we're really gonna, oh boy. Next week, we're going to really do it. Next week, the subject is sex magic. Oh, boy. So, next week, we're going to do sex magic all the way from the Gnostics and all the way from P.B. Randolph through Crowley, through the Eastern version and the magical child and Culling and Kareza and all the rest of this stuff. And we'll try to keep this, I don't know whether it's going to be exactly a family show, but we'll try to, we'll try not to get too intimate, let's say, but still, I think that we'll, using circumspect language, we'll manage to get the gist of it across. And so that ought to be exciting, and I imagine we'll pick up some new listeners on that. Anyway, so we'll see you next week. Next week, get ready for the Hieros Gamos and all that good stuff. And meanwhile, take care, be well, and good magic.